Awesome. All right. Thank you very much for the organizers. I really appreciate the invitation to talk. So I know all the fly people. How many of you are manure people? All right. So yeah, I really want to talk to you guys because I don't know very much about poop, although I've learned more in the last 5 years than I ever cared to. So how do I advance with my my arrow? Okay, so I'm going to talk about flies, like everybody else, associated with manure. It's not working. Down?
Yeah.
Got it. All right. As we all know, manure happens a lot more than I ever thought possible. So I am very interested in a sort of a food safety kind of thing. You know, what happens when flies come in contact with manure? And the best example that I can think of is like following the family dog. I mean, let's face it, you follow your dog, it takes a dump, and then what's the first thing that happens? 30 seconds later, it's covered with flies. And so this interaction between flies and fresh manure is very interesting. Primarily for me anyway, just like Dr. Berry, from a food safety standpoint. And so we're concerned with manure as a source of pathogen, and there's all these contamination routes. Do I have a little pointer thing? Yes, I do. And so we're concerned with this route from manure to plants. And one of the reasons why we're concerned about this is in relation to some of Christina's results about volatiles. You know, flies are very attracted to plants. And you were talking about, you know, possible plant volatiles in Elaine's work with turnips. If you've ever just watched turnip plants, you'll see that flies come to them naturally. So there may be some more stuff going on than we originally thought. So this is the area that I'm particularly concerned with. Movement of material from manure over to plants, which are then consumed by people. And so I came up with this little cute little model. Here is your average fly. So what are the routes of contamination by flies? You all know this, but I'm going to show you this cute little cartoon. Okay, they barf. All right, so they regurgitate. There's casual contact, which, you know, they walk on surfaces and then they walk on things that we eat. And then, of course, the area that Dana Nagich has been concerned about is with defecation and movement of pathogen and deposition at the back end. And so there's all this work that's been going on movement by flies. I'm going to concern myself primarily with regurgitation and casual contact, because I'm eventually getting to the point where, you know, with the dog do, flies coming and then flying to your potato salad or your leafy green salad very quickly. You know, what happens with pickup and put down of pathogen? Okay, so I'm going to start by summarizing some work that was done by one of my graduate students, Lakmini Wasila. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but this is a lovely electron micrograph of fly vomit after the fly came in contact with contaminated manure. So what you see is a nice matrix of material. This is actually manure that's been vomited along with some bacteria. This is E. coli 015787. This is just to show you what a vomit spot looks like.
Is that on a plant?
Yes, it is. It's on spinach. It's on spinach. So if you see one of these on your spinach, don't eat it. Yeah, I have a lot of lovely shots, but it's just amazing how well these regurgitated bacteria interact with plants. And so here's another micrograph of another regurgitation spot, and what you can see are these bacteria-like organisms, which we assume are E. coli 0157, because that's what the fly was fed. It threw up onto the leaf surface, and you can actually see the bacteria. It looks like it's in the process of division, so growth on a fly speck. So we wanted to really look at this. What's happening in regurgitated manure in this fly speck? So here's a very complicated slide that summarizes everything. So my students took house flies and exposed them to manure, cow manure, bovine manure, that was contaminated with E. coli 015787, sterile water manure, or just straight E. coli from a plate in the control. And the important take-home message is that when flies vomit onto a leaf surface after they fed from these sources, we looked at these regurgitation spots at 0, at 4 days, and at 8 days, and looked at the bacterial load in these fly specks, vomit spots, over time. And what you see is the bacteria actually grew from day 0 to day 4. So the regurgitated manure, the regurgitation spots, provided a wonderful resource for these bacteria to survive on the leafy greens. And the reverse of that is we just took, you know, bacteria alone and spotted them at roughly the same concentration, and they didn't grow. And so what this suggests is that that E. coli, O157H7, and probably other bacteria as well, when they're in a regurgitation spot, regurgitated manure, they can survive for longer periods of time. The nutrients from the regurgitated manure actually support bacterial growth. And so this can be a really important message, you know, in terms of food safety. So, you know, when I tell people I'm giving a talk to leafy greens growers, you know, you see that fly, you know, on your salad? You know, it's probably not a big deal, but if you see him taking a dump or vomiting, you know, that's when you, you know, toss it out. Okay, so flies vomit and they crap. Okay, so that's pretty serious. But what about really casual contact? Because that's where we really see flies interacting with manure and then going to a food source. And so that's what I'm really interested in. We have people like Dana Nadich and Ludwig Zurich looking at stuff that comes out during defecation. But what about very casual contact? And so I'd like to focus the rest on that. So I'm going to show you my standard set of slides showing you the surfaces that come in contact with bacterial sources and then food. And so, I loved Christina's EM shots. Those were absolutely gorgeous. But I love my labellum shot. So these are the mouth parts of the housefly, which shows these sponging mouth parts that Chris Geddon was referring to. And these are the pseudotracheae that channel food into the true mouth, which is here, hidden. So these are the pseudotracheae, like what's that? The Thomas's English muffins, lots of nooks and crannies. Well, this is exactly what that looks like, lots of channels. And here you can see this is a fly that's fed on bacterial source of E. coli 015787. And you can see the bacteria attached to the pseudotracheae. And look at this. You can actually see them in the process of division. And so this surface provides a very nice place for bacterial growth, which is kind of spooky. Okay, so here's the other business end of flies in casual contact, and that's the feet. For those of you who have never looked at a fly or seen the movie The Fly, they're absolutely gorgeous. So here's the tarsal claws and the impodium here, and you see these lovely sticky hairs. This is what allows the fly to climb up on surfaces. And so they secrete kind of a substance that makes them sticky. And so this is what is coming in contact with manure or any other surface when the fly walks. And so if you look at these structures, these hairs, after a fly has walked on a bacterial source, you can see that the bacteria, I don't know if you can see these, but these little like blobby things, this is E. coli 015787. This is what was made available to these flies, sticking very nicely to these tarsal hairs. And so this is a great way to then leap into what happens when flies walk on manure and then they fly, and what happens quickly in a very short period of time. E. coli attached to the hairs. But before I get into that, I'm sorry, Elaine, I'm going to present exactly the opposite of what you just presented. I'm not going to show you the data, so it's kind of like cheating. You're going to have to believe me. But we did some comparisons on acquisition and inoculation efficiency between house flies and blowflies. And in a nutshell, what we found, and I'll show you the data later because you really shouldn't believe me without it, but houseflies lost. And in fact, it was the blowflies that were much more efficient in acquisition of E. coli and Salmonella. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to move into pick up and put down a pathogen, if you will, but I'm going to focus on the blowflies because, well, they're prettier. How about that for an excuse? I and a colleague, a USDA colleague down in College Station, T.C. Crippen, came up with this protocol to test the 10-second rule. Really, we need to go to the 5-second rule because that's what everybody knows about, but we needed to have enough time for the flies to pick up. So we call it the touch, tap, tap, where they acquire for very short periods of time from contaminated manure, and then the tap, tap is when they set down pathogen on leafy greens, in this case lettuce. So what we wanted to do is shorten up these times to get closer to what flies, or what we think flies might really be doing when they encounter manure and then go to your salad. Okay, so this is comparison acquisition of both E. coli 0157H7 and Salmonella using these very short acquisition access period times. And so what we did was we had three sources, peptone in manure, peptone water, E. coli in manure, or Salmonella in manure. And we use Formia regina, which is, what is that one, the black blowfly? Thank you. But we had to cheat a little bit because flies fly, and I didn't like this stuff flying around, and plus it's hard to control them, so we de-wing them. Anybody's in PETA, I didn't pull their wings off, I cut them off, and they can't feel it. So, but then they're just forced to walk around. So they were put on these manure sources, and then just to test how much they pick up, we then ground them up and planted them. So here's the procedure where my student, Rebecca Pace, spread the manure around that had been contaminated with either pathogen, and it was at the same levels. And then the flies were placed in buffer and then homogenized with my Omni buffer. That's a great way to get a fly milkshake. And then they were plated. And we used, like everybody else, a GFP tag signal. And this just shows that it worked. We can detect which bacteria were being recovered of both Salmonella and E. coli. And so here's some of the data. So using blowflies, what we found is that blowflies were much more efficient at picking up, acquiring E. coli than they were Salmonella. There wasn't a significant difference if you increased the time. So if you went from 10 seconds to 30 seconds, they still picked up about roughly the same. There's no statistical difference. But there is a difference between these two pathogens. So there's something going on. Salmonella is just not picked up as efficiently as E. coli is. And this mirrors some of the plant the plant pathogen work with sprouts. E. coli sticks more harder, or more, is that right? Sticks more better.
Yeah.
More higher than Salmonella. So so that was interesting. Okay, so what about this? Putting it, you know, they pick it up, but what about deposition? Because that's the business end of contamination. So here's the tap-tap part. So we took the flies in the next experiment, exposed them to the manure, and it was a pretty high level. It was about 10 to the 6. So a roughly equivalent of maybe a super-duper shedder. And then they were immediately placed on, and successively, onto lettuce discs for short periods of time. In this case, I think it was 30 seconds. And so this just shows how we did it. And here's the data. So first we wanted to figure out how much were they picking up. So this again is with blowflies, picking up both E. coli and Salmonella, but this time after 30 seconds. And what I want to point out is again, they picked up significantly more E. coli than Salmonella. And then after they had gone through their taps, here's what the exit load was, so what the difference between before and after. And so you can see, look at the difference. There's 20,000 versus 6,000 here. So there's a huge difference in the initial load versus the exit load. And the only differences were between the two pathogens. Okay, so blowfly significantly picked up more E. coli than Salmonella. So now let's look at the tap part. So deposition of E. coli and Salmonella. So they tapped on the lettuce disc, and then we crushed them up, plated them out, and recovered. So first of all, I want you to notice the difference in the scale. The number of E. coli dropped off was several orders of magnitude less than what they picked up. So there's some discrepancy here, okay, and I can't explain that. I don't really know what this is, but this is the number recovered from the lettuce. Okay, so between E. coli, the first tap and the second tap, there was no significant difference, but you can see that there is something here. And maybe that has to do with, you know, differences in structure or whatever. But or sex differences. You know, Dana talked about a gender difference. These were mixed genders, males and females. So maybe the high variation was due to the fact that we had males and females in this cohort. And so now I'm thinking we need to go back and repeat only with males or only with females, and it might separate out more. But with between E. coli and Salmonella, we didn't get a difference, whereas before we did. So I'm not really sure what's going on here. But this, the number that was dropped off, the first tap, the first 30 seconds, and then the second 30. The important thing is it's a lot of bacteria. 80 cells will make you sick. And so if you think about that, 30 seconds walking around in your salad, that could be pretty significant. Okay. So that's all I really wanted to present, but there's so much more to this story. I think that we're just on the edge. We have a nice cohort of people who are working with flies and trying to understand how they interact with manure. Dana, Ludic, and Christina working on passage through and things like this. I'm very much interested in what's going on the outside of the fly and how casual contact can impact movement of pathogen to a food source. So I'm going to end with this statement. There are billions and billions, you guys know more about this than I do, manure producing animals on the planet. So I'm including cows, pigs, sheep, dogs, cats, that are very attractive to flies. Field flies are attracted to these manures. And so I was wanting to know from Christina, which one was the cow manure smell? Okay, I know about the urine, the ammonia, but what about the cow manure odors or the manure odors? Which one of those compounds was involved with that? We need to get some headspace of some dog poo and figure that one out, because I think that would be really important. But they're attracted to them. To a lesser degree, the flies are attracted to the plants we eat, and that's a whole other story, because there's so many interactions with other animals, such as aphids, whiteflies, etc., and how it impacts movement of flies into a field. If you think about it, the average fly lives about 21 days, and so the biotic potential, Chris threw out a number, and I don't know how this fits, I got this off of Wikipedia, quadrillions of flies. And so if you take that teeny tiny amount of pathogen and you multiply it by quadrillions, is that per day, per year, per month, whatever? I don't know. But that's a lot of potential for movement of pathogen. So I really think there's a big story. The whole point is that flies interact with manure, and then they interact with food, with plants, potato salad, whatever. So there's a lot of potential there that we need to follow up on. Okay, so with that, I'm going to acknowledge everybody who did the work, and that wasn't me, that was my students, Rebecca Pace and Lakmini Wasila, my collaborators, all the people listed here, oh gosh, one of which is in the audience, thank you, Alec, couldn't have done it without you. And then, of course, I was funded by one of the last USDA NFSI proposals ever awarded. I wish they would go back and create this program again. So it was a wonderful opportunity. With that, I thank you, and if there's time for questions, I'll take them. Thank you.